There have been several times where I wish that you carried that around in your pocket.
I think I need to start doing so.
Yeah, I think that would help you a lot if you carried a Serenity Now button.
You are listening to From the Dome to Your Home podcast, the Municipal Association's weekly look at legislative action and issues facing cities and towns around the state. I'm your host, Casey Fields.
Welcome back.
Okay.
My guest co-host, I really appreciate you taking time out of your busy day.
Yeah, I guess I'm just going to have to resign myself
guesting on other podcasts.
That lesser stat. Oh, I killed on the Simply Civics podcast last week. Yeah.
I bet it was just raging.
Look for that to debut in a couple of weeks.
I bet you really slayed.
The riveting topic of annexation.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Can't wait.
Got deep in the weeds. Process, motivations.
I just have to let you know that we have a new listener.
Oh, I have one to mention also.
What? Are you going to mention mine?
No, I don't know yours.
Casey with a K?
Oh. Casey with a K.
Right.
Way up there in Gaffney.
That's right. Casey with a K started listening to it, and she was like, this is awesome.
Where has she been?
That's not exactly what she said, but, you know.
Speaking of salty.
You know what I mean.
Yeah.
But I would just like to welcome Casey with a K to the podcast.
Taff Matney.
No way.
Our colleague in the lobby and council member for Malden told me a little bit ago that he is an occasional listener. So,
occasional.
Well, you know what? We'll take the clicks when we can get them.
That's
Casey.
Exactly right.
Right.
He just wants to pop on and listen to what we're talking about that specific day.
Sure. I'm okay with that.
It really works.
A la carte.
Really works better if you listen from the beginning because you get all the inside jokes.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean,
yeah, you do have
you're
to.
Gonna, yeah, you got to know. True. You know, you kind of got to listen. It's like what I tell the kids, Mom. How was your girls' weekend? You got to go to know.
Yeah.
And they'll never go. So
yeah.
There's that.
Still waiting on an invitation, Mary Elizabeth.
Yeah. That's my sister and she doesn't listen to the podcast. So what kind of cred do I have with anybody else
Indeed.
If she won't listen? Let's go ahead and start out of the gate with the trivia question.
Oh, wow.
I'd like
Changing
to go
the
ahead.
Format of the
yeah.
show.
I like to keep it. Well, it's,
so are we going to tease it now and allow people time to Google the answer? And
no.
Then, we're just going to dive right in.
Scott, this is my show, so I'm going to do whatever I want to do.
It's our show. Go ahead.
Scott, what municipality in South Carolina is named for a United States president?
Well, we don't have a Washington here in South Carolina. We do have a Jefferson.
We do, but that's not the correct answer.
We have a Georgetown.
We do, but that's
named after one of the KGs from back in the day.
That's correct.
Let's see here.
Russell's getting very excited. Mr. Producer is getting excited because he doesn't think you know the answer.
Nathaniel Green was not a president. Greenville was named after. Columbia, of course, was named after Columbus, who was not a president. Let me keep thinking. Gosh, I don't know. That's a tough one. Is it a small town or a larger town?
It's a smaller town.
Yeah. It's not Jefferson. We don't have a Polk. It's Lincolnville.
Ah, so close.
It's Lincolnville.
Yes, you're exactly right.
Yeah.
Founded by a group of African-American men in 1867 and chartered in 1889.
Right.
It is named for Abraham Lincoln.
Adjacent to Somerville.
Adjacent to.
Yeah.
Mayor Enoch Dickerson.
Yep.
Is the current mayor of Lincoln.
Their town hall is in an old school, although I don't know if it's an old Rosenwald school or not. I don't think it is.
Positive.
They're in an old school building. I know that. It's a nice building. They've done good work to it.
Mayor's lovely, as is his wife.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, Scott, a lot went on, but for the House to be on furlough this week, which they were, the Senate got a lot done.
They did some business this week.
I mean, they're moving some things around.
Yeah.
We are over a month, I guess, away from crossover.
Mm-hmm.
The self-imposed fictional deadline to where bills have to leave the originating chamber.
It's not a fictional deadline. It's very real.
It's real,
it is self-imposed.
Right.
For sure.
It's a self-imposed deadline. What do you want to talk about first? Let's talk about...
You want to talk about the Bouget first?
Yeah, let's talk about the Bouget. While the rest of the House of Representatives took a furlough this week, the members of the House Ways and Means Committee met beginning on Tuesday afternoon and wrapped up on Wednesday morning. No, Wednesday afternoon.
Because it was like 12:30. It
took a while. Yeah. Their version, the House Ways and Means Committee members' version of the state budget. As everybody already knows, but just a quick refresher, the governor submits his proposed budget to the House Ways and Means House.
Mm-hmm.
Then the House Ways and Means Committee takes those kind suggestions from our executive branch does whatever they want.
You know, that's true. But I think, Casey, here the last couple of years that the governor's budget has probably garnered a little more attention from House Ways and Means than in previous years. I mean, the joke always used to be that the Ways and Means Committee would just take the governor's budget proposal
throw
and throw it in the garbage can and do their own. But I think they're, you know, Governor McMaster's been able to get a couple of things in there and kind of use the bully pulpit to bring to their attention the things that he would like to
agreed.
Like to see
and
get
they
done,
really have. So. You're right. They have taken his recommendations and, you know, it's been a very.
They haven't dismissed it out of hand
previous
years.
No. Right. Not at all. So yeah. They adopted the good news for cities and towns is that the local government fund is fully funded at the 5% that it, by statute, that it is supposed to increase with the general fund.
And that translates into currently an additional $13.8 million.
That is correct. Now, let's everybody remember that this is very early in the process.
Yeah.
But in years past, since that bill was passed that required the 5% increase, our economy has increased, and therefore we have seen an increase in the local government fund.
Yes.
So I don't anticipate any sort of huge revenue drop between now and June.
No, in fact, I would expect that $13.8 million to probably go up a little bit.
It can't go any further than 5%.
Right. But if the total budget is, instead of the total budget being $41 billion like it was, or the general fund budget being whatever it was, let's say $20 billion, and it moves to, between now and the time they adopt it, it moves to $24 billion.
Right. We might see a small
then we'll
increase.
See, you know, that 5%
becomes
number
a bigger
stays
number.
Where it is, but because it's a
bigger budget.
It's a bigger number on which you're calculating the 5%. It's a bigger number, yes.
So there were also included in the budget, members included $1 million in non-recurring additional dollars to COGS.
Yes.
And that to was be something split.
That, yeah. They asked for that.
That's
The COGS asked for that. We support that, of course, because they need more money to help local governments do the core functions that COGS were created to do, which is planning and that kind of thing. They've kind of had to move away from a lot of those things over the years because there's just no revenue in it. And so hopefully this will help them push that mission down the road.
They've also included the money in non-recurring one-time money for destination-specific grants for tourism.
Tourism grants.
And then also a huge chunk, $200 million in non-recurring money to get a quick start on the bridge projects throughout the state.
Yeah.
And repairing and upfitting our bridges. We got a lot of them.
The gas tax increase has funded a lot of road construction across the state. Certainly Secretary Hall's, one of her primary interests has been in bridge safety and improving bridges. There's as much money as they've put toward bridge improvements. It's still not enough considering the number of bridges that need work. So I think the Department of Transportation appreciates that. And
absolutely.
Hopefully we'll see that hitting the ground very quickly as soon as the budget's approved.
We'll be able to see the benefits, the actual fruits of the labor.
Mm-hmm.
So Joni Nickel on our staff, she covers the budget. So she will be following it along the week of March 11th, I believe, is when the House plans to debate the budget. That is what is on the calendar. Anyway.
Do you want to talk about what's not in the Ways and Means version of the budget?
Well, I think we certainly can. Well, we can. Let's talk about what was proposed yet withdrawn.
Yeah.
Would you like to talk about that?
Sure, if you want to.
Yeah, I'll do it. So
I think we have to.
I mean, it's my show, so we we were fully expecting. As we mentioned last week and have mentioned, we mentioned it at HLAD, we mentioned it everywhere, that there would be another attempt to include a short-term rental proviso in the budget, banning cities and towns from banning short-term rentals and or regulating short-term rentals.
Yeah.
As just as we suspected, Representative Todd Rutherford from Columbia, mm-hmm. he introduced... In the committee, he introduced the short-term rental proviso.
Right.
And then withdrew it.
He did. He withdrew it on the hope that and expectation that a piece of legislation might move forward to address his concerns, and with the promise and expectation that all the stakeholders would get together and continue to work on that. I'll tell you that we've had a number of discussions in the last couple of weeks with a variety of different stakeholders about short-term rentals. They've just been discussions where there are no necessarily any concrete proposals that are forthcoming, but we're continuing to talk as we always do.
Absolutely.
And as we're always willing to do.
Absolutely.
To try and address issues where we can. So I thought that was very... I thought that was a positive step for Representative Rutherford to withdraw that. And I think that was a recognition that we are good faith partners in negotiating and working and willing to talk. So I look forward to having those discussions as we go forward and come to potentially someday some solutions that we can all live with.
That's exactly right.
For right now, it's the status quo.
That is a good thing, because we're not working to try to remove a proviso.
Yep.
We are fine with the budget moving out of committee and onto the floor. So that's not to say that there may be another attempt by a different legislator
exactly
to include a short-term rental proviso, but I hope that those Ways and Means committee members saw the spirit of cooperation
yeah.
that Representative Rutherford withdrew his, and so they would not be willing to do that.
Does it preclude a House member, another House member, from trying it on the floor in a couple of weeks? Does it preclude the Senate from attempting to do something
That's
similar
right,
going
when they
forward?
Get a hold
so
of it.
This is one skirmish that was not. So there will be others, certainly, we expect, and we're prepared for. And
that's a good
we'll
thing.
Deal
that's
with
a
them.
Good thing.
Yeah.
The least amount of skirmishes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is the best. But
the battle of
we're
Musgrove,
not afraid of them.
The Battle of Musgrove Mill, Mr. Producer, was not necessarily a battle, I would call it. It was more than a skirmish.
Like a dust up?
Yeah, it was a...
Or a squabble is what James Moat calls
it. It was a...
A squabble.
You know, I think... I don't know what's between a battle and a skirmish, but that's what Musgrove Mill was. This
well,
was
I
a skirmish.
It was a dust up.
This was a skirmish.
Yep, very... very it, and
a what? A fracas. That's what,
listen to Mr. Producer with his vocab.
Means,
I bet he did really well in the SAT verbal.
A fracas?
Let's go to some standalone bills that have moved around.
Okay.
Would you like to do that?
I'm happy to do that.
Okay. Quickly, Joni Nickel on our staff, along with the budget, she has been working on the Abandoned Buildings Revitalization Act mm-hmm. tax credit extension.
Yep.
We were approached several months ago by a representative of the private sector that said we really need this extended. It doesn't the cap does not cap, but the extension is not until next year. But
sunsets next
we
year.
Need to go mm-hmm. ahead and
right.
get this done. So Joni worked, and the bill, Senate Bill 1021. It extends the Revitalization Act tax credit until 2035.
Yep.
And it increases the maximum earned tax credit to $700,000.
Is it 700 or 750?
I thought it was
750.
I'll check it again, but I thought it was 700.
I know I've heard her say 750, and then okay. I heard her say 700. Anyway, it's a substantial increase.
Yes.
Because as Joni explained, you know, the ideally you would might want to tie it to CPI as an index so that it just automatically grows over time. But that's not something right. that necessarily we thought we could get past. So the Senate subcommittee agreed to that $700,000+ cap, moving it from the $500,000. It's a great tool. Joni testified in support of it, got out of subcommittee. It'll go to the full finance committee now, and with the sponsors that are on it and the unanimous support among, there is no opposition to it that I'm aware of.
Right. No, I haven't heard any.
So I would hope that it'll get through the finance committee pretty mm-hmm. quickly when they meet.
And, you know, get it out of the Senate before crossover. Yeah. And we'll be rolling.
Yeah.
So that was passed out of subcommittee. Full committee, as you said, is the next step. The other bill that was passed out of subcommittee is Senate Bill 1017. Mm-hmm. That is the fix to the 2017 bill that was passed.
2020.
Yeah. I thought somebody said 2017.
No, 2020.
That bill passed that was causing some headache for some of our cities.
Yeah. This was the law that allows, makes it easier for private money to get into affordable housing projects, in partnership with nonprofits. The nonprofits asked for that change back,
right.
4 years ago. Since that time, that law has been used in ways that were not intended by the General Assembly, so that you've got some unscrupulous operators out there on the private side that are taking advantage of the law. Senator Michael Johnson from Tiga K was sympathetic to this. He heard from the city of Rock Hill. We heard from the city of Rock Hill. And in fact, Ann Hardy, who's the chief financial officer for the city of Rock Hill, testified this morning in subcommittee on that bill and explained to the subcommittee what the issue was. It's causing a loss of property tax revenue for cities and towns. The bigger problem is, up until this point, there's been little to no notification to jurisdictions
right.
that these properties are going to be taken off of their mm-hmm. property tax rolls, and therefore you can't count on that revenue. The bill seeks to address that notification problem. It also will require these properties and these entities who are using it to recertify periodically, and that they are still in compliance with the law. And then on the very front end of these deals, there's a requirement that these entities notify the local jurisdictions that might lose property tax revenue as a result.
Right.
So there was no one in subcommittee today who was against this change. There is one issue that needs to be addressed between the subcommittee's passing it out today and it going to the full finance committee,
mm-hmm.
and that is how to deal with those projects that are already on the books and taking advantage of this. How do we help them transition into compliance with this new law if it were to pass?
Okay.
So we'll be working with Senator Johnson on that. Erica Wright on our staff has
yep.
been communicating with Senator Johnson and working on those amendments and the changes that we sought from that law. And Senator Danny Verdin from Lawrence, who's the chairman of the subcommittee, was very interested in how we could help him and the rest of the sub. So looking forward to doing that next week, and hopefully we'll get some resolution on that going forward.
That yet another bill out of subcommittee that we've been working on, and it's getting moved very well. So
maybe the full house needs to stay on furlough.
Yeah, no, really.
Another week so the Senate can continue getting
so
the product pushed
we,
out.
You know, our, just to let our listener know, we will be watching for an agenda to the full Senate Finance Committee, because those two bills will go to full Senate Finance. And so we'll be watching for that.
I don't know. Have they
that
met,
agenda to be published?
Have they met so far this
They've
session?
They've met once.
Once.
I
That's
think.
What I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of another committee that has met once, the Senate Judiciary Committee met on Tuesday afternoon.
That's right.
For the first time this
yeah.
session. There have been subcommittee meetings, but no full committee. So
right.
they met on Tuesday. And they passed, they had a very long agenda. We were covering a couple bills on the agenda.
Yeah.
But we were following that, the Senate Bill 251.
Yes.
Another Senate bill that is moving that would allow first responders to file a workers' comp claim for PTSD.
Yeah.
You have been working on this bill for, feels like 10 years.
A couple of years. Again, Senator Michael Johnson from TKK was interested in this a couple of years ago. Firefighters Association and other public safety entities came forward and asked that someone who is diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder be allowed to file a workers' compensation claim on the basis of that diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
The original bill that was filed was not acceptable to us as cities and towns, as employers. So we, you know, we have to approach this from two directions, employers of these individuals, but also being wanting to be supportive and
right.
empathetic to the problems that our employees, city employees are dealing with. And of course, this is an acute issue that is worthy of discussion. In working with Senator Johnson, we were able to incorporate a number of things into the bill that passed out of subcommittee this week.
Correct.
That we had agreed to a couple of years ago. One of those things is that a first responder would have to be exposed to a list of potential scenarios or events that could be causal to their PTSD. They would then have to be diagnosed under a national psychiatric standard as having PTSD. And then they would also have to have exhausted all of their PTSD treatment services that are offered by the state through the South Carolina FAST program for firefighters and
right.
the South Carolina LEAP program.
Yeah. For police officers.
If they meet those criteria and then they are still have this diagnosis, then they could move forward with a workers' comp claim.
Mm-hmm.
These criteria that they would have to meet were not put in place as a barrier
right.
necessarily
right.
because ultimately our goal as employers and employees is to get back to work.
Right. And to get people help so they can get back
correct.
To work.
And so,
yes.
you know, rather than saying, yeah, just go straight into the workers' comp system, let's see if we can provide some treatment
right.
on the front end
right.
and get them back to work so that they don't have to go into the workers' comp system because
mm-hmm.
that's not the place to be if you want to make a living.
Right. Right.
And so I think everybody is okay with that. And we're pleased that Senator Johnson kept that bill intact, and it's on its way to the full judiciary now.
No, that bill passed out of full judiciary.
I'm sorry, out of
so
full
judiciary.
It's
Senate.
On the floor. I'm
yeah,
sorry. Yeah,
it's
on
headed,
the floor.
You're
it
right. was actually on the calendar today, but Senator Shane Martin from Pauline,
yeah.
he kind of makes it his business to follow the rules of the Senate, which
yes.
I certainly appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
And he, a bill has to be on the Senate calendar for 24 hours before it can be debated.
Right.
So he brought up the point of order that hadn't
yeah.
been. And so it was, you know, carried over to
along
the
with a bunch
day.
Of others.
Oh yeah. It was
yeah.
a whole, I mean, pages worth of bills.
Thankfully he uses brevity and says, you know, Mr. President,
right.
I'm going to ask.
It's this whole group.
I'm just going to give you
like these two
everything
pages.
That's on pages.
That's right.
22 through 25.
Yeah. And they very much appreciate
yeah,
that.
Right.
And
rather than
go
through them one
exactly.
at a time. Yeah. We're not one at a time in it here.
Speaking of the
we're
Senate,
mass
let's talk,
communicating.
Let's talk about how things kind of got a little punchy.
Yeah.
Twice.
I love it when we get punchy.
Twice this week. There are just some senators that are kind of calling out each other, I would say, that are just kind of talking about really just bringing it back to reality.
So the point was made this week by a senator that I will not name, but you can go back and watch the broadcast, that there were 50 some on Tuesday, there were 50 mm-hmm. some odd bills on the Senate's calendar, only 16 of which did not have an
objection. Right.
Which means,
and each senator does have five.
Okay. So, the point was being made, if there's a problem, if you as an individual sender have a problem with a bill, rather than put your objection on it, which prevents it effectively from moving forward or from being debated, and we'll talk about this a little bit more. I know you have some thoughts on this.
I do.
If you've got a problem, then go talk to the sponsor of that bill and try and work out your problems rather than just preventing debate on the bill individually. So that point was made. And then yesterday, the Senate got on to flounder catch limit bill that Senator Chip Campson from Isle of Palms is sponsoring.
Yep. And it came through his committee.
He's a sportsman. Yep. He is probably the lead environmental voice in the Senate.
I agree.
Probably the most knowledgeable of the environmental voices in the Senate. He, you know, he wanted to ensure that the 5 per person catch limit for flounder over 16 inches or 10 per boat stays in place. It used to be 10 and 20, I think.
Yeah, it was,
and then they changed it a couple of years ago. They dropped the catch limits down to a lower limit because of the pressure that the fishing was putting on the flounder fishery around the state. Should be a pretty routine bill, something kind of easy to do.
You know, usually the ag bills, they really, nobody really says much about those.
But that bill got twisted up
on third reading.
On third reading, which usually is largely perfunctory, got twisted up into an hours long debate that was really interesting. When, and in fact, as it played out, it turns out that this was also a protest effort against people who were holding bills up for moving forward.
Correct.
So, and that's, you and I were talking about this before we started recording. This has happened to us before.
Sure. And Scott, sometimes it's with, you know, bills that have absolutely nothing to do, you know,
entirely
somebody might say, look, I support your bill, but this, you know, this person who is sponsoring this bill, he's got his objection or she's got her objection on one of my bills. So I'm in favor of your bill, but I got to make a point.
Yeah.
Or
I'm
using yours as leverage to get mine passed. So I'll take mine off if, you know, I'll remove my objection if he removes his objection.
And so whether or not they're talking to one another with those problems, apparently, you know, I think this is sort of cyclical. This kind of happens.
That's right.
Then you get a little bit of a reset and people say, oh, yeah, you know, I do need to go talk to so-and-so about the problem that I have.
And,
with that
bill. Scott, and I feel like we're a broken record because we're talking about this over and over again. But
election
year.
We're gaining new listeners all the time.
Yeah,
Casey,
exactly.
So.
Casey with a K. It's an election year.
Yeah.
And it is game playing central up there right now.
Yeah.
Because everybody is concerned, well, am I going to have a primary opponent? Well, who's behind that primary opponent?
Yeah.
Well, am I going to have a general opponent? Well, who's behind that? And it's hard. I mean, it's very difficult, you know, because now while we are trying to write and pass good policy measures, politics is now controlling the show.
Indeed, it is.
It is controlling the show.
And so for listener, if you're not following us, each senator has 5 holds objections that they can place on a bill, any one bill, once it gets onto the Senate calendar.
And you can hear it said different ways, either an objection or they've put their name
put
on
their
it.
Put their name on it, yeah.
Which also could mean they've put their name on it as a sponsor.
Right, right.
But if somebody says no, Senator whoever has their name on it, then that means they're objecting to the bill, placing it on the contested calendar.
And you and I use put their name on it.
Yeah.
We interchange those, but the contextual clues, you know, can tell you what we're talking about.
And so if they're on the calendar and they are debating an uncontested bill, the way a senator would move that to the contested calendar is that all that senator has to do is stand up and say, I object to the bill.
Object to the bill.
And then it's on the contested calendar.
And that's recorded on the calendar.
Sure, in the journal,
and the journal and on the calendar if a senator has a is holding the bill up.
And sometimes more than one senator will hold a bill up. Sometimes there'll be two or three. And usually just one. But there are instances where there are more than one senator objecting to the bill.
Tell the listener, though, that doesn't mean that it can't be debated.
No, just generally. Well, when a bill is objected, when it's under objection or it's have somebody's name on it, there's some controversy about it.
Yeah.
And could possibly lead to a lengthy debate. And if they are trying to get to other things, then they don't want to necessarily get into a long debate on a bunch of contested bills. Now, sometimes all it takes is that for the two senators to talk, and then all you have to do is let the desk know if you'd like to remove your name from the bill. Right. It can be taken up. I believe that, you know, they can debate contested bills.
Yeah, the point being, just because you have an objection on it doesn't mean that it can't be debated with your name on it.
That's just
a matter of whether or not the body wants to debate bills that are on the contested calendar.
Right.
Right?
Right. It's harder.
Right. Of
you
course.
Know, it's harder. So it is definitely a technique that if you do not like a bill, that if you can find a senator who is willing to put their name on it, that has got, you know, their five or less to use.
Yeah.
I think that's a, you know, that's certainly a way. It's a strategy to block a bill,
right?
Because very rarely will they say, you know, let's get on the contested calendar.
Yeah.
But it could happen.
Yeah. Even though they could get on the contested, they could debate bills on the contested calendar. Mm-hmm. An objection effectively stops that bill from moving.
It slows it down
considerably.
Yeah. Now, if you want to bypass trying to get the person to remove their name, you just get the bill put on special order.
Right.
But you got to have the votes to do it.
Yeah, you say that as if it's really easy to put a bill on special order.
You just, in the motion period, you just move for the bill.
Well, I mean, we've seen that a couple times already this session.
Special order slots have been used big time.
Well, or attempts have been made to put something on special order.
That's exactly right.
They say, no, we're not going to do that.
So. Right, right. It's getting real punchy. And a lot of it does have to do, Scott, with the hate crimes bill that is being objected to by two senators. And, you know, I think the proponents of that bill just want the day to debate it. They just want to be able to debate the bill.
Yeah.
And those senators are keeping that from happening.
But this grumbling about objections being on bills was bipartisan this week. It was not,
absolutely.
It was
oh,
not
no,
one side
it was
or the other.
Not at all. It was a unified, universal grumble, squabble.
Yeah. So, it was a pretty busy week.
Now, as you know, the difference is that in the House, it takes, if you raise your hand and say, you know, I object or
I want debate.
I want debate. Then you have to get 9 of your friends to join you. You have to have 10 members request debate is what you stand up and ask. And then that moves it to the contested calendar. Now, sometimes, depending on what's on the contested calendar, what other business they have to do, the House will not debate bills on the contested calendar, but eventually they will get to it.
Yeah, when they run out of other stuff to talk about.
Right, they'll get to it.
I think they get on their contested calendar more often than the Senate does.
Facts, yeah. Those are facts.
Because they just need, not that they need something to do, but.
Right, they'll run through the uncontested pretty quickly.
Yeah, they get done quickly and they've still got, you know,
it's not difficult to get a bill on the contested calendar in the House.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you think about like the Democratic caucus, they've got more than 10 people. The Freedom caucus has more than 10 people.
Yeah.
The Republican caucus obviously has more than 10 people. So as long as you can get people that agree with you to move it to the contested, then sometimes you'll hear sponsors of the bill or supporters of the bill putting their name on it as well. And
that's twice already you've taken it
out of my mouth.
Yes.
They will do that so people don't get to it, take their name off, move it back and move it back and then flip the order of the
strategic.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a little peek behind the curtain.
Thus endeth the lesson.
But we're moving closer and closer to filing.
And, yes.
On March 16th, I think is when it starts.
And closer to the crossover date.
And closer to crossover.
What's it? That's in 3 weeks.
It is
now.
No, it's like over a month.
No.
April. A month
I was thinking
before.
It was March. Why do I keep thinking March?
I don't know.
Okay,
I mean, we're almost
right.
into March, but no, we're a little over a month.
You're absolutely
away
right.
from yeah. crossover.
Yeah. But yes, the filing. So yeah, the filing deadline. Candidate filing deadline
is the
next big looming.
That's right. So it opens on March 16th. All of that is on the Election Commission. So you can look at what I can look at and see who has filed against who to run for office and what House members are going to run for the Senate and what senators are not running again. And they're going to be, Scott, I feel like a broken record, but there's going to be some changes. You can go ahead and sing the song.
I'm adding to you every week announcements I'm seeing from primary opponents
are
coming up who are not already members. So
we have a,
I hope you're compiling.
We have a fabulous spreadsheet.
You're doing that, right?
We have a great spreadsheet that
I
follow that. I mean, like I go through that and follow it. I mean, it's nerdy, man.
See, I'm bringing those things to you, Casey, from the alternative media that you're not following. So
no, I do not listen to the radio stations that
you listen to. I'm not talking about the radio. I'm talking about printed media. So
I'm listening to
where I'm getting my info.
My Apple Music on my phone and my murder podcast.
Oh, I have that. I have that.
Do you? You don't do Spotify?
No, I have the Apple. I use the Apple podcast.
Oh, yeah.
That's where you can find City Quick Connect from the Dome to Your Home.
That's exactly right. You can just subscribe on Apple Podcasts.
That and all of your podcasts.
And any other
services.
Channels. Although that's in the outro. I list, every week, I list all the different ways you can download podcasts. Scott, is there anything else on your list to talk about or did we...
No.
Wrap it up.
Just like whenever reporters ask me that same question, I can't think of anything.
Nope, not at all. Not one bit. Next week, the House and Senate are both in session. The House really doesn't have that much on the calendar, so they're going to have to get some work out of committees.
Does the budget sit on the desk next week?
Yes.
Okay, so it sits on the desk
the
all next week, and then they could get to it the week after.
The budget will sit. It has to.
Yeah,
sit so members can look through it and draft their amendments so they can have all their amendments ready. And I will tell our listener this, that just as something to point out, the Senate just adjourned a little bit ago, and to my knowledge, and it could have happened, and I will certainly correct myself next week if it did, they have not appointed their conferees to the constitutional carry bill as of yet.
Yeah.
The House appointed theirs, but the Senate has not appointed theirs.
So I read some stuff that the Senate right now is holding fast on its position on the amendments that they made.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be a standoff.
Well, that should be coming up soon. We're going to see a lot of things starting to move fairly quickly. But we, of course, will stay vigilant.
Got to remain vigilant.
Got to.
Okay.
It's now getting to the point where, their amendments are going to be flying, and we're really going to be paying attention. And so should all of our listeners.
Yes. Both of you.
Paying attention. Both of you. Casey with the K, I'm talking to you. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we will talk to you next week. Be sure to follow the Municipal Association's podcasts on Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Audible, Spotify, and SoundCloud. Find the latest from the Municipal Association on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and the Association's website, masc.sc.